Vishnu takes on his multi-armed form and says, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of the world."
Everybody, and welcome back to a special edition Midnight Film Pod Oscars edition. Me and Derek will be breaking down all of the Oscars winners, losers, all the weird moments, good moments, bad moments from the Oscars. Derek, sir, how are you doing today?
I am doing well, ready for this special bonus edition.
Yes, we do this, you know, we've done it the last couple of years. We did the reaction pod to the nominations themselves. Sean Fantasy and Amanda Dobbins did one right after the show. A lot of people do write it right after the show. I actually prefer doing a little bit later because you get the stories of like, ooh, this thing actually happened. You get the reports, you get the... one of the things I actually really like more than the acceptance speech themselves is when the winners go to the press pool and get questions from the press. Not to spoil anything, but Christopher Nolan talks to got a question from his former classmate at some school that they went to years and years ago. So it's always nice to see those moments of like, oh, hey, it's you from my past. And remember this teacher? Yeah, that was fun. So, yeah.
That's always cool, yeah. And then also, you know, it gives you a little more time to stew and think about things, so you're less reactionary, more of a clear head about things.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
For you, that means just listening to other podcasts and what other people thought.
Yes, get other people's opinions so I don't have to create my own. Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's kick it off. Overall thoughts on the 96th Academy Awards, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel for a third or fourth time, I believe.
Third or fourth. It's one of those.
Overall thoughts on the Academy Awards, sir?
I thought they were pretty solid, pretty good. You know, I actually only watched in bits and pieces because I couldn't get off work. I was trying to go to a friend's watch party, but couldn't make it, so I was watching on my breaks, and then I watched a good chunk of the awards in like videos and recaps and stuff like that.
Yeah, I had, I've cut the cable, I've cut the cord for many years, for multiple years, over a decade at this point. It's always a tenuous, struggle to find a stream that will, you know, has it on there. I always resort to getting YouTube TV because it's the most reliable and it's not cheap. It's like $80 once a year. I do that for the show, sometimes for the Super Bowl as well. But yeah, I watched almost all of it, reacted live with not Twitter, I think Threads and Discord. I was in a very active Discord. I was actually in the Blank Check Discord. It has quite a few members in there, so it was quite rambunctious after a while. But yeah, I liked it as well overall. We'll get to some of the stuff that we didn't like. But yeah, very, very... I think we talked about this where it's traditional. It's boring, but it's good that it's boring. That it's, you know, you get the awards out there. You get the people giving speeches that aren't overly emotional, that aren't overly controversial. A lot of people just went up there and thanked the people that you would normally thank. It has to do with a lot. You know, in the last few years, I've definitely been getting more into the awards season itself. So you really get to notice that they... You know, 15, 16 times they've probably done this acceptance speech somewhere, right? From the Indie Spirit Awards to the SAG Awards to the Critics' Choice Awards, all they have practiced and said a lot of the things a lot of people see for the first time last night. So just to speak to the sort of casualness and the normalcy of last night, yeah, it was good. I like that. I agree that it was a very good show overall.
Yeah, there was some really good moments, some really good bits. You know, you had the John Cena bit. You had that was incredible. You had some great presenters. You know, John Mulaney and of course the "I'm Just Ken" number was just phenomenal and filled with all these, you know, great references to Marilyn Monroe and Busby Berkeley and all this stuff. so it was cool. a good night for international films, especially Japan.
Yes.
A lot of, and yeah, like you said, it didn't have any crazy gaffes. You know, there was no one getting slapped, no one reading the wrong awards. Yeah. You know, I'm sure we'll get it until yes. the presenting and stuff later. Yes. But you know, good presenting. You know, it moved at a clip. You know,
yes.
It came in. You know, under time, which yes. We might talk about later
yes.
on.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really well done, and I think that even with the awards themselves, you know, you never want to watch something where it's just like, you know, the results of every single category, because that's boring. It's like, well, okay, cool. We knew all the precursors, so why are we even watching this? It's too predictable. It's boring. So you need every once in a while, it's nice to be like, well, what's going to happen this way? Oh, I didn't really expect that. That's cool, you know? There's some really cool moments where there was a couple, you know, upsets or underdogs winning. But, you know, then there were some people that we were expected and wanting to win who were able to come through as well. You know, that was really cool to see people who have been trying to get Academy Awards for so long, a lot of first-time winners. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So, just a good ceremony.
Very good ceremony. So let's get to some specifics. Opening monologue was not great, I don't think. A lot of jokes at our DJ's, Robert Downey Jr.'s expense about his drug problem, which he told them, like, you know, move along. Let's not do that. The jokes about, like, the length of the show, length of the movies, it's very much played out. We've been seeing those jokes over and over again. Really didn't think we need any more jokes about the length of movies or the show itself. And just overall, man, you and I and a lot of people watch this show and watch movies because we love movies. And we love talking about them. We love rejoicing in them. And I just think you want to be sincere about this stuff and you don't want to veer into sentimentality, but that's the point of it, right? We come here to celebrate movies, and I just think for over a decade now, really, has been this turn of, yeah, we know we're all rich, we know we're all just famous, and we know this is just a pat on the back, so let's just mock it as much as we possibly can. And I think that's been done to death. I think they need to get back to just, we love movies, movies are great, acting great is amazing, this job is amazing, this career is amazing, this medium is amazing. So, yeah, what do you think about all that?
And I kind of disagree. I think that Kimmel's opening monologue was pretty solid. I didn't mind the RDJ jokes, and apparently that is a joke that Robert Downey Jr. cleared, you know? It's not like he was joke coy, you know? Sure. You sound like a Swifty right now, just like, how dare you, sir? Yeah. Make fun of my beloved, like, you know, the way the Swifties got all mad at joke coy.
Yes.
It's the same way the film bros are getting mad at Kimmel.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was fine. There were some really good moments. I really liked the Remember the Kid from the Failedman's moment, and then cut to Steven Spielberg. That was a really good joke.
Yes.
So I thought there was some pretty good jokes. You know, I would honestly, Kimmel was good. I think it makes sense to have him there. Like I talked about with our award show one, he was able to handle both the La La Land gaffe and the slap gap kerfuffle, I guess we'll call it. So yes. It makes sense to have him. But I'd like to see, you know, maybe like some people were saying after Mulaney's presentation, they'd love to see Mulaney do it. And I
Absolutely.
Guess he did the the pre, like Oscars, like the, you know, the technical ones or whatever that they give out beforehand.
Ah.
So, you know, I didn't mind it. I thought there were some funny moments to it. And, you know, I get why. Yeah. You know, it's there is some self-effacing humor, and, you know, maybe could use less of that. But, you know, I think that, I don't know the numbers yet because I'm not sure if they've been released at the time of recording, but I think this Oscars did really well. I think it, because everybody loves movies. It doesn't have to be just like you and me and film bros and stuff. It can be the people who are turning in because, hey, for once, the first time in fucking, you know, two decades, the front runner was actually a movie that people liked and saw and made $1 billion. And, that was really cool. That it's like, yeah, people are probably turning in for the whole Barbie and Oppenheimer thing. And that's something I've been saying, that, you know, the Oscars should be actually like giving recognition to good movies that people see, not just good movies that people don't see. Because I like both. Yeah. I love Past Lives and I love Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the thing that's well said. Just to point to the viewership, apparently it hit a 4-year high. Obviously, with COVID and all of that, definitely impacted the viewership previously, but hit a 4-year high with 19.5 million viewers. So that's good. good to see.
There you go. That's what happens when you nominate these movies that people give a shit about, you know? And you're Oppenheimer, it's an art film, or not an art film, but it's a, you know, an auteur driven film from a, filmmaker that is deeply respected with all these like great ensemble cast of actors, and it still made $1 billion, and that's something we maybe it's gonna come back into vogue. That would be cool.
Yes, exactly. I just want to say real quick, they people that get awards. Dave Chen was talking about this because he was watching it live with chat apparently, and somebody mentioned, you know, can people just be prepared when, you know, you are, if you're nominated for an acting award or actually even a below the line stuff, you have a 1 in 5 chance of winning. So you have a very good chance of winning. And I understand it's like, you don't want to jinx it. People are very superstitious about this stuff. You don't want to jinx it by having a prepared speech, but it's like you have a 1 in 5 chance of winning. It's not like winning the lottery. It's like you're there with 4 other people. You have a very good chance of having to be brought up there and have somebody to say. I would prefer people had something an outline of what they're going to say, you know?
Well, you specifically brought up David Chen. Did you see the video I sent you of David Chen?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe you should watch that because he specifically disagrees with you.
Yes.
because he is saying, like, you know, there is, his point was that he thinks that, you know, there is a lot of, you know, superstition and stuff like that. There is a lot of things that go into the acting stuff, and he used to have kind of a similar opinion as you. It's like, oh, be prepared, but he's softened on that a lot. And you know, my whole thing, though, is like, I kind of hate it when someone just gets up there, they're just reading off a sheet, and they're like, thank you to my publicist, thank you to New Zealand, thank you to whatever, you know?
Yeah.
That's all well and good, but it's kind of boring. I much prefer, we'll talk about her later, but the person who got up and seemed kind of genuinely surprised that she had won, because it was, some people like me were giving her pretty good odds to win, but she was not the front runner. And, you know, I thought it was a really genuine, heart like touching moment. And I love it when people get up there and just speak from the heart and are just like reacting genuinely rather than like, you know, fucking Will Smith getting up there giving his weird speech that he gave that was like, and you're like, it's so weird because it's like the most ingenuine thing, especially because the tone of the room drastically changed from when he wrote that speech to when he delivered it. Yeah. I think speak from the heart, you know, shoot from the hip. I love it.
Both things are good. You're right. Both things can be good. But we also, you know, at the beginning of this, we always talked about how, sort of the normalcy and the traditional speeches were received well. You know, I think there is something to speak to of just, you know, having a you're right. There's a benefit to both. There's benefit to a heartfelt from the off the cuff speech, and there's also a benefit to having an outline. How about that?
There's maybe a balance to hit.
Balance, yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, they did. Speaking of how they presented the awards, they had 5 previous winners handing out the awards for the winner. And again, I think this speaks to, like, we mentioned the show being shorter, and it was. So maybe this didn't negatively impact that. But you know, it just felt like a little bit of fluff of having past winners come up there and say possibly a written for them written speech, or they wrote something for themselves to say to the nominee. I'm not actually sure how I feel about this, because it felt, you know, I like to see the clips, like Sean Fennessy was saying. A lot of people were saying they were missing the clips.
People are saying, all right.
People are saying, the greatest people are saying.
a lot of people, all right, Sean. If you met Sean, he's a great guy.
He's a great guy, great person. People haven't seen the movies. Okay, let's take that for a second here. People haven't seen the movies and they need to see clips of the movies at the show. That's the argument against having the presenters there, is that it takes away from showing the performance that they're nominated for, right? But my thing is, watch the movies. I'm sorry. This is 2024. They're available way more than they ever have been. I understand. It's like we've had this discussion a couple times where movies aren't playing near me. and we've come on the show and you've seen a movie I haven't seen because it isn't playing near me. There are exceptions to this. There are instances where movies aren't being shown. I get that. But overall, movies are way more available than they ever have been before. And I just feel like if you're watching the Oscars, you've probably seen the clips. So I guess that is me arguing for this format of having the five previous winners handing out the awards. What is your thoughts, Derek?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle on this one too, you know. It does, it's always kind of cool when you get a clip thing, but then also you're just like, am I just watching a trailer right now?
Yes.
What, you know? And I think there was some genuinely great moments that came out of it, you know, like Nick Cage being like, oh, would I have warned the lazy eye? Yes, you know, of course. You know, like there's some, but you did, Paul, you did.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was some good moments that came out of that. There was some heartfelt moments that came out of that, you know?
Yes.
So, and I don't know, it was kind of cool. Like, just like nostalgia to be like, oh, wow, these are the people who won like the last 5 years. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, it was cool. Oh, yeah, yeah, Sam Rockwell did win. Oh, cool. Nice, yeah. Nice Tropic Thunder reference, you know? Like,
yeah.
I like seeing all the past winners. It's like, it's, you know, because the whole thing about it's when you win an Academy Award, right? You're joining this very prestigious club, and it feels kind of cool to have the people who are already in this club kind of get, like, welcome you to the club. And especially since there were so many first-time nominees, that felt especially cool.
Yeah, yeah, I liked a lot of it. I think what it does is, but it sort of introduces a too much variance. I think we have, we'll talk later about some of the presenters not presenting very well, partially because of their age. But yeah, I think you introduce a chaotic element into it when you have, you know, what is it? So it's five people per award, four awards. That's 20 people. 20 chances for somebody to flip a line, which they did, right? I forget who said it. Somebody said the Oscar nominated or Oscar eligible. So then he said Oscar winning.
He said Oscar winner. Yeah,
it was, Oscar winner.
He was talking about De Niro.
Yes, yes, exactly. So you have, you know, I think having all of these presenters, you definitely are introducing a an element of chaos that you wouldn't have otherwise. But yeah, I agree that it could. It is an interesting way of doing it. I would prefer maybe seeing it again next year.
It'd be cool.
Getting to some of the specific presentations and some of the comedic, I have this whole comedy section here. Kate McKinnon and America Ferrera presented the Best Doc Short and Best Doc Full Length feature. They had really great chemistry. I really love this presentation. It was one of the best moments of the night, one of the best presentations of the night, one of the best jokes of the night was towards Spielberg receiving tasteful nudes from Kate McKinnon. It was very, very funny.
Yes. Two great cutaways to Spielberg in this, honestly.
Yeah, he's a guy that does very well with that. Of like, Mr. Spielberg, we just need you to give a a face. He's very good at giving a reaction shot. Yes, absolutely. And then you referenced it earlier on, but John Cena doing what was it? Jimmy Kimmel was talking about unexpected moments and how, you know, was it 47 years ago or something, a streaker came on to the stage when David Niven was presenting an award. And he's like, and I said, when another streaker might appear, and John Cena comes out sheepishly and he's like, hey, I don't want to do the bit anymore. It's very, very funny. And he's like, he's just a mountain of a man. He's just a mountain of muscle. So it's very funny to see just like, you know, 250 pounds of just pure muscle just slinking his way onto the stage, hiding his nudity with just the pamphlet, with just the envelope. It was very, very funny, right?
No, that was really good. Like, Cena is incredible. Like, he's just somebody who I used to like not like him a lot when he was a wrestler, and you know, he's somebody who, in my opinion, has just done a complete 180 on. Like, I think he's one of the funniest people working in Hollywood. So just really great physical comedian as well. And, you know, it felt like a good tongue-in-cheek way to be like, yeah, the Oscars have had some controversy. We're going to reference one from 47 years ago, so we're not, like, making everybody relieve the slap. But I felt like, you know, like I mentioned, Kimmel has been through a couple of these controversies. Yeah. And so for him to kind of be like, oh, let's make another cut, like, it felt very, you know, very meta reference there.
It was very funny. And then another highlight of the night, very funny highlight of the night, was Ryan Gosling doing the I'm Just Ken performance, starting out.
God, so good.
It was so good, man. Starting out in the audience with his hat on his head and just singing into the mic there. Really great dance choreography. Really, really one of the best moments of the night. One of the best, you know, Oscars moments I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, they really did not, like, Gosling is just a guy who's not afraid to just be big and ridiculous and whatever, in the same way that John Cena isn't. And yeah, him just going all out, having the other Kens there, you know, it referencing all those, like, old classic tropes and movies and stuff. He just gives such an incredible performance, you know, that me and all the other, like, insufferable La La Land fans just like died for a second when he like had Emma Stone say I'm Just Ken. Like, it was so good. It was so good. You know, it was definitely better than, you know, The Fire Inside. You know, no shade to that. Yeah. But you know, it was an incredible Oscar moment that I think we're gonna remember for a very long time.
Yes, it was very, very good. Then of course, one of the other great comedy bits of the night, and you referenced it earlier by saying, you know, talking about Mulaney, who should, you know, probably get a shot at this. He's very good at, you know, the times we've seen him. I believe, didn't he host the Independent Spirit Awards he hosted this past year?
That is very possible.
Yeah. So, you know, he's just really good in these moments of, like, remember movies? you know, the host of a movie award show, shockingly, surprisingly, should love movies, should see movies. I think that was one of the things that referenced on The Big Pick was he hosted the Independent Spirit Awards. He referenced moments from those movies. So shockingly, yeah, a guy that loves movies, that actually watches the movies, that can reference specific parts of the movies, should host them. It was a very funny moment of him riffing on the last 10 minutes of Field of Dreams and just, you know, verbatim rattling off all the names and the moments. And did it a very those are apparently ghost rules. You can't go back in the field once you come off it. What was the other thing he was saying? He's presenting for sound, and he's like, you remember these great moments, we're gonna need a bigger boat. I forgot the second one, but the third one was talking about Madame Web.
Now the Oscar for achievement in sound. You know, for years movies didn't have sound, and then they figured it out. Some people say that the silent era was the golden era of film. These people are difficult and insane. Without sound, we wouldn't have been able to hear such classic lines as, you're gonna need a bigger boat, I'll have what she's having. And he was in the Amazon with my mother when she was researching spiders just before she died. Or what about that moment in Field of Dreams when we hear, if you build it, he will come. And then Costner does it. He builds a baseball field. Or I guess he doesn't build it. He mows down corn, and then there is a field. And then he's like, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And the bank is like, you want to pay your mortgage? And he's like, nah, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And then he finds James Earl Jones, who wrote The Boat Rocker, which I thought was a real book deep into my 20s. And he's like, people will come, Ray. He's the only one with a financial plan. But what's weird is Timothy Busfield pushes little Gabby Hoffman off the bleachers, and she falls down, and she's unconscious. Then Burt Lancaster is Moonlight Graham, and he comes up and he pats her on the back a couple times, and he's like, hot dog, stuck in the throat. And then he can't go back in the game, because I guess there's a rule in ghost baseball that if you leave the field at any point to become an elderly ghost and do the Heimlich maneuver, you can't return to the field. I love Field of Dreams. That should win Best Picture, though they'll probably go with one of this year's. Here are the nominees for achievement in sound.
Remember that great line in Madame Web? Which my mother died in the Iron Forest.
He says, he's like, great lines, like, we're going to need a bigger boat. Or, he was in the Amazon rainforest with my mother researching spiders just before she died.
Very good.
And then he also had that good line of, he's just like, a lot of people think that the silent era films were the golden age, and those people are inseparable.
Those people are ridiculous or something like that. The exact wording, but yeah, it was very, very funny. Yes. That's the comedy highlights of the 2024 Academy Awards. Shifting gears here pretty dramatically. In Memoriam was pretty good. You know, it's going to get longer and longer as we get further away from, you know, the 60s and 70s. A lot of those guys were already old when they started acting. So a lot of these a lot of these in memoriams are going to just get ridiculously long with how many honorable, but also notable is the word I'm looking for. Notable actors, directors, writers, all of these people that contributed greatly to cinema over the past 100 years. They're going to have to make some painful, cuts to it, but unless they want to, in like 10 years, this in memoriam is going to be like half the show, right?
Yeah, and there's always people that you're always bummed. Like I was like, where's Treat Williams? So there's but you can't fit in everybody. I don't know if I loved the in memoriam segment this year. It was just like the interpretive dance and like having the screens in the background. I'm just kind of like, I'm always of the opinion you need to tear that thing down and just make it less of a showy thing and just show the people who died, That's all you need, honestly.
Yes, exactly. And then they had a stunt choreography montage, which was very good. We've talked about how stunt choreography needs its own award. The newest award is, like we talked about, the Best Casting Award is going to start in 2026. But, they spent a bunch of time, right, giving nods to stunt choreography over the past year. And was it just last year or just in general stunt choreography? I think it was a bunch of clips from years past, right? Or was I?
I don't know. That's okay. The one clip that I didn't get to catch up with. Emily Blunt and Gosling introduction, though.
Yes, that was based on the Fall Guy. So they pivoted from the stunt choreography montage to Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt because they're going to be in the Fall Guy later this year. Mm-hmm. Great banter. I love Blunt. I don't know if you've seen any clips of Emily Blunt on the Oppenheimer press junket, but she's one of the funniest and best at sort of off the cuff and very just naturalistic and charismatic in the moment. So yeah, very good moment there.
Yeah, and then, to take a page out of your book and just, talk about another podcaster's reaction to this, Dan Merle was saying that he basically was watching this thinking, like, oh, they're going to, like, surprise announce that they're also adding a stunts category. Like, that's why they're doing this. They're going to, like, rather than just, like, announce it in the trades, they're going to announce it live in the Oscars. And he was like, this is going to be, like, the coolest moment ever. And then it didn't happen. And, like, that would have been so amazing if that would have happened. And, of course, no. Like, it's like, oh, we'll give you a little montage, but no awards. Don't worry.
Yes, exactly. So, speaking of awards, the rest of my notes here have a lot to do with the winners. So what do you say we start bringing in some of the actual winners of last night?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Emma Stone is here, everyone.
All right. What do you call that? Quick on the draw. So I have a note here about 20 Days in Mirapol. The winner of the Best Documentary Feature gave a great speech. Speaking of speeches, one of the best ones last night was given the time it deserved. They didn't play him off at all. But when they did play him off, they played "I'm Just Ken," which is a little tone deaf, literally and figuratively, there.
That's not great.
Mislav Chernov, I was reciting this before the show. I was like, I'm going to get this. Mislav Chernov, the director of 20 Days of Mirapol, gave a great speech and was unfortunately played off with a not great song. 20 Days of Mirapol was one of the, chalk picks to win, and it did win there.
We should mention that we had our own little competition for who could pick more,
and down to the wire.
It came down to the wire. We both did pretty well. Like we both, I think, had this. We picked the same amount of correct picks as I think like Variety and a bunch of those places. You were a little more conventional. I was a little more off the wall. But like I said, with that being a combination of upsets and staples, we ended up it being a very close competition. But yeah, like you said, this was a chalk pick. We both picked this one right.
We did. And just to be clear, we're going to reveal our picks at the end of the show. We're going to talk about the actual winners. And then at the end of the show, we will reveal who won the betting pool, the Oscars betting pool. We reveal at the end of the show who won. So moving on from that, a lot of Barbie snubs this that night. The only thing it won was Best Song, What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish. Great performance last night. What'd you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I get why this one won, but it seems like the Oscars, they always go for the sad and slow song over the fun and great song that's actually maybe a better song. I think I'm Just Ken was a better song. And you know, the Oscars don't like to, like, it's part of it's because I think it's, you know, A, it's that, but it's also B, it's like, it's Ken's song. And the Oscars were already in trouble for nominating Ryan Gosling and America Ferrera, but not Margot Robbie in acting, I guess. So I think that's why, part of the reason why it broke the way it did. Those two reasons, you know. But it's still a good song. I think it's the third best song in the movie. I think Dua Lipa also had a better song in the movie that wasn't even nominated.
What was I going to say? Oh, she, Billie Eilish and her...
Phineas,
thank you. I think they're
and
one
Ferb
of...
also.
Phineas and Ferb. I gotta know if he was named after that, because it would have been around the right age. I don't know what year Phineas and Ferb came
out. Jesus Christ, that can't be right. We can't be that old that there's gotta be. Fucking... Oh my God.
So moving on from that, I was going to say, Billie Eilish might be one of, or the...
No, he was born in 1997. You're okay. Way off, man.
All right. Okay.
Your math is terrible.
I didn't realize he was that old. no, Billie Eilish, 22, might be the youngest winner of two Academy Awards, I think. She's one of the youngest to win two. So that's cool for her. So let's get to some of the awards. A lot of first-time winners, one of them being Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Fantastic speech, fantastic win, right? All around there, right?
Yeah, like, you know, this is one that, you know, was a lot of people saw coming. But yeah, she was great. Her speech was great. This is one I got to watch live. It was really incredible, really, really moving. Like you said, this is first time win for her. Really motivational. She was really great in The Holdovers. So it was really cool to see her recognized.
Yeah. One of those just like, yeah, it probably, you know, it was a chalk pick, but it was a chalk pick for, the reason that she gave the best performance. It was one of those like, yeah, correct and correct. Yes. For all the reasons. Yeah. Stated.
And it's one of those it became a chalk pick, but it, like, if you look at like all those ones of like the way too early picks that come out like right around now for like the next year Oscar, so this would have been like in the 2023, she would never show up on one of those lists, you know. It was like a snowball, just gradual, like people like, oh, she was really good in this, and she starts to get some awards buzz and gets more awards buzz and gets more awards buzz, and then finally she's the front runner for the Oscar.
Yes,
she finally wins it, you know.
Yes, many, many first-time wins tonight. Wes Anderson finally has an Oscar for best short, right?
Yes, for the wonderful story of Henry Sugar, best short film live action.
Yeah,
which was you know, because he could have been in the animated short film at some point in his career. But yeah, it's crazy to think that like this is for Anderson's first win, because it's so random. But like, you know, those Netflix shorts are all really good.
Yes, they were all very good. Correct. The Boy and the Heron took home not a first time win for Mr. Miyazaki, but good to see that. We'll talk about who had what, but
I'll just say I have been very vocal about how much I loved The Boy and the Heron, and I was really hoping for this. Like you said, this is not Miyazaki's first win. He did win the second ever. Animated feature back with Spirited Away, which means, you know, so, and this is in all likelihood Miyazaki's last film. I think it's a crowning achievement. So I was very, very happy to see this. And since it's Miyazaki's second ever win in this category, it also means it's the second ever win for a traditionally animated film. Because this award started right around, like, Shrek was the first winner. So it started right around when it was starting to be more CG film, like CG films were really starting to take hold, and traditionally animated films were starting to lose their sway. And so CG films were the new and an upcoming thing, and then they became the only thing. And so it's nice to see, you can still draw a movie and have it look this fucking spectacular and have it win this award.
Yeah, the past winners were Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Wallace and Gromit, Happy Feet, WALL-E, Ratatouille. Yeah, just
And by Pixar, that is like board. Pixar just kicked its ass, kicked so much ass in those early, especially in those early years. And by the time, you know, some other studios were coming in, that's just the way the industry had changed.
Yes. Speaking of, great to see Japan. Japan picking up the award for best visual effects for Godzilla Minus One, which is I'm glad I won. We'll talk about my pick later, but very good to see. I love the attire that they had on. They had the winners for this award: Takashi Yamazaki, Kyoko Shibuya, Masasaki Takahashi, and Tetsuyo Nojima. All had their heels were like Godzilla claws, and they were all walking around with very very elaborate Godzilla action figures, which is very cool to see. But yeah, Godzilla Minus One, it's a movie with visual effects that were made for like, I don't know, $15-20 million, which is very impressive.
Crunch. Excuse me. I mean, with that in mind, it's good to see these guys got an award for doing a lot of work for not a lot of money. Good for them.
Yes. Let's see. Let's go to Cord Jefferson, one of the first time winners there, gave a great speech. One of the best speeches of the night, right?
Yes. And so just to clarify, Cord Jefferson for best adapted screenplay.
Yes. American Fiction.
American Fiction.
Yep.
Great. I thought that was a great speech. I always loved to bang on about screenwriting and how screenwriting doesn't get recognized. He gave a great speech about that. And he also talked about something that I really care about a lot, which is, that these mid-budget, lower-budget movies don't get made. And if they do, they're only for Oscar prestige. They're not for, like, wide appeal. And, like, he brought up a good point, which is, like, yeah, these movies, which are, quote-unquote, the sure things, the $200 million movies, last year were not sure things in a lot of cases. And he's like, yeah, why not take a risk? And he basically said the thing that Blumhouse is doing. Why not take a risk with 20 $10 million movies instead of one $200 million movie? So, you know, which is a very good point. And it has been very viable for at least one studio. So I think that is something that maybe Hollywood, given the past year and the weird economic trends, might start doing. So he had a very good speech and a very good point.
Very good speech. Very good point. Totally agree. And to that point, I was looking at my best of 2023 list, and I didn't write them all down. I didn't do the math, but I'm just going to tell you my top 10 again, just in the mm-hmm. context of how much money they, the production value, the production cost of each film. Past Live was like $15 million, number one. Number two was Killers of the Flower Moon. That was, what, $150 million, right? Holdovers was, I think I looked up, it was like $15, $20 million. Poor Things was probably, what, $80 million, I would say. And then the big one, Oppenheimer, number five, $150, $200 million. Maestro, very expensive. Godzilla Minus One, like I said, $20 million. So if you go through my list, I'm just stating this for the purpose of pointing out that, you know, every other movie really was what he's talking about. And I don't know, just in general, I think that is a sort of an overblown issue because, if you want to seek out good movies, they are there. You can easily do them. This isn't the 50s anymore. You don't have to go to a repertoire theater to see good movies. They are ill available in many, many places. So I think, you know, getting people excited to make a movie, getting those cameras in their hands, getting financing, getting those stories told, very, very important, right? I'm not saying that's not. But I think there are many more movies like he's talking about out there that people are not seeking out.
Sure. The thing that he didn't bring up but that I always bring up is, and I think what you just said really supports it, is with one exception, which is Poor Things, all of those movies you mentioned, they were like 15, 150, 20, 300 million. Like they're either these budgets that are very small or very large. And, you know, that's why I'm glad Poor Things had a pretty good night, because it is a rare mid-budget movie, and one that was actually a very phenomenal success. You know, that was a movie, how often do you see movies, like the movies that are made for $60 to $80 million are really kind of disappearing, honestly.
Yes.
And those were like the bread and butter of, like, not just the Oscars, but, Hollywood for so many decades. And to see that it is kind of just split off and become either indies or big blockbusters, and we're losing that in between is really troubling to me. So I'm hoping that this year turns that around.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to the rest of the awards, want to take a break and just they take a bathroom
yes,
break.
Yes.
Derek knows that I have a small bladder, so we'll be right back. And we're back. So yeah, like I said, a lot of first time winners. Do you want to get to? Yeah, we'll get to Robert Downey Jr. First time winner for Best Supporting Actor. For Oppenheimer. The speech was, like we mentioned before, you know, very not modest, and it was a very odd speech, actually, because you're expecting, like, you know, I've been a actor for a long time, blah blah blah, I've really tried to be accepted by my peers, but he's not that guy, right? He's not modest at all. So
when he came up, I was like, he's just Tony Stark. Like, that's
he is,
who he is.
He really is. You know, what did he say? Like, he's like, I like to think my childhood.
My horrible upbringing or something like that.
Yes.
And the Academy in that order.
In that order. So, you know, I don't know. I for some reason, I thought we might see, like, you know, some first to see him get emotional. I guess that really wasn't ever going to be in the cards for him, right?
Yeah, he's not Bradley Cooper. He obviously wants this, and, you know, obviously really appreciates being praised by his peers, but I don't think there's a deep part of his soul that, like, you know, like him or Leo, who, like, Cooper or Leo, who's just, like, really is, like, or, you know, Anne Hathaway, were these people who it clearly means so much to them. And hopefully Cooper will get to join those guys at some point, but yeah, not for this one. This was RDJ's year, and deservingly so.
Yeah. And, another acceptance speech I really liked, another award I really liked, that they won for was, Justine. They were doing this on the Big Pick. It was like, it's not Justine, it's Justine. So it's like French. Anyways, Anatomy of the Fall.
What is happening?
Anatomy of the Fall won.
Yeah.
Justine Trient and Arthur Harari won for Best Original Screenplay. And I very much, enjoyed their speech. Speaking of good speeches, speaking of, people winning for the first time.
Yeah, no, it was really cool, and, you know, part of this year of, you know, recognition for international film that I felt was really cool.
Yes, they were talking about this. The international body, the international segment of the voting body was very much on display this year. Let's see.
And this is deserving. A great, a really phenomenal screenplay.
Very, very good. Very good. Yes. Ludwig Göransson picked up Best Composer for Oppenheimer. Definitely deserved that. Definitely was rooting for him to pick that one up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I was rooting for him, but it was because there was a lot of good scores this year.
Yeah.
But it was a very, very good score, you know, one that is re-listenable, you know. Obviously a big fan of that guy. A lot of people know him from his recent work, including The Mandalorian, and it's cool. You know, it's part of Oppenheimer's pretty dominant year.
Very dominant year, yeah. And just getting to that, Hoyt Van Hoytema, the cinematographer for Oppenheimer, also picked up another award. I'm not sure. I forgot to look up, how many Oscars Mr. Hoyt Van Hoytema has, but I believe that's not his first one, right? He's won it before.
I think he has won before, because, he's one of these guys who has just, he's been Nolan's guy for the last couple movies, but even before that, he's done a lot of good work. He's even gotten, even movies that I don't love, like Ad Astra and Spectre, look really good. He got snubbed for Nope, I think.
He did,
so, this is his first.
Yeah.
His first win. Yeah, he got nominated for Dunkirk, but he did not win. So good for him for winning this one.
Yes.
Well deserved.
Yeah, another first time winner. Like, you know, last year that was the theme of the Oscars as well, of so many first time winners. So yeah, good good to see back to back years. We have a lot of first time winners there.
Yeah, definitely.
Then another first time win was, you know, we're getting to the big ones, but I want to include it in the first time winners and. Pretty good speech, you know. Christopher Nolan won Best Director for Oppenheimer. Another, you know, it was one of those where you, earlier in the night, you see Oppenheimer, like we said, picking up the below the line, I forget what they're called, below the line, but not construction, but those kind of technical awards. The technical awards, those picked up earlier in the night, so definitely saw that coming. Good for him. You know, he's been a stalwart of the, you know, this age, the last 20 years of filmmaking. Definitely one of those names that you always think of when you think of the 21st century filmmakers. So, yeah, very good to see him finally get his award.
Yeah. And it felt fitting that it was Spielberg that gave it to him, because they are like these guys who are like these champions of cinema and, you know, going out and going to see a movie on the big screen and trying to shoot, you know, Nolan's like the last guy who's like has this old school mindset, was like, yeah, shoot everything on film and stuff like that. So it felt like, you know, like a passing of the torch a little bit, like is, you know, he kind of feels like, you know, the way like Spielberg is a great, great director and definitely makes these movies that are like masterpieces, but he's also very much someone who's very, I wouldn't say populist, but like, you know, these people love Spielberg movies in the same way that people love Nolan movies, both cat. And so it's, and somebody who, you know, early on in the career was maybe not totally respected by the Academy voting body. Yep. And so I think a lot of parallels between them. They work in genre, but they also then will do things like, you know, Oppenheimer or, you know, these, you know, more serious war films or biopics or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute observation there. And then just before we pivot to some of the shutouts and snubs, I did want to point out the Best Documentary Short Film, which I saw, which I really actually really enjoyed. I should go back and start watching more of the Best Documentary Short Films from years past. The Last Repair Shop won Best Documentary Short. And it's very, very good. And it's, you know, I picked it to win. It's a... we call it a hometown favorite, so that's why I picked it. And it's a, you know, it's a very good show about, or a very good short, very good story, I should say, about the things I've been talking about quite a few times here of taking pride in your work, pride in the details, and pride in doing a good job. So yeah, really enjoyed that and very happy it won.
Yeah, yeah. This is why I know it's like free on YouTube, and I need to watch it, especially since, you know, you mentioned it's like a hometown thing for you, but it's also about like schools in LA County, which is, you know, where I grew up in LA County. So I need to check it out.
Yeah, it's very good. And then very quickly, Best Animated Short Film went to War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. So that's weird, because the animated short films was some of the ones that were kind of hard to see. So I only caught up with 95 Senses from that list. I'm not sure how many of those you saw.
I didn't see any of them. I heard this was not good, but I picked it to win because I was like, oh, it's got John and Yoko's name attached to it. It's about something that seems very like easy Oscar bait. You know, like it's a film like, oh, about anti-war. And unlike, you know, 20 Days in Mariupol, it seemed like they like, you know, how that guy was giving this speech about how bad, you know, all the tragedy and stuff. And they were just like, "Happy Mother's Day, Yoko." You know, it's like, I you know, I get when people are like, "Don't make the Oscars political," but I'm like, they're winning an award for a thing that is about anti-war. So maybe that's okay to bring it up. So yeah, it was a cynical pick for me. this one.
Yeah.
And I was right, because I think I kind of don't have the greatest opinion of the Oscar voters, and sometimes I think they just are like, oh, yeah. I recognize John and Yoko. I'm going to
take this one. Yeah, exactly. Before we get to snubs and other stuff, I forgot to mention more of the technical stuff, more of the technical awards. Zone of Interest, amazing, amazing sound design. Mm-hmm. That to come, the award there for Tarn Willers and Johnny Byrne. Production design went to Poor Things for James Price and Shona Heath. Set direction by Zuza Malek. Very good. Any thoughts on those two?
I mean, yeah, Zone of Interest. We talked about it when we reviewed it. The sound design in that film is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, this is always a category that's a little... I'm always like, you know, it's always a little tough to choose unless you're someone like, you know, like my friend. I'll just shout out my podcast, Underrated, because I did one on Walk Hard this week with someone who works in the industry as a sound designer, Austin Olivia Kendrick, who... Unless you're someone like her who works in sound and like can be like, wow, this is why this sounds so good, you're going to have a little trouble picking what's good in this category. But with this one, it was like, wow, okay. Rather than being like movie like Oppenheimer or Transformers or something that has just really good sound, you might not know. So it's like the sound design is so is what is the thing about this movie. It is so front and center. It's what drives the, like, without the sound design of this movie, it doesn't work at all. It completely falls apart. It's what makes it go. It'd be like taking Paul Giamatti out of The Leftovers. It just wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's we'll get to it later, but it's definitely another example of most versus least. The bombastic versus subtle. Yep. And then production design went to Poor Things. That was a technical award. It also picked up Best Makeup and Hairstyling. So that in retrospect was very telling, let's say, of the biggest award of the night, or one of the biggest awards of the night, right?
Yeah, I mean, the production design in that film is honestly incredible. So I think this is a movie that deserved to win that. Like, just made this big, awesome sci-fi steampunk world that looked like it was built on actual sets. And it combined, yeah, they built it on real sets. They did, you know, do a lot of stuff to zhuzh it up and stuff like that. But it was clearly not just shot on like a volume. They were clearly shot in real sets and then used all this, technical stuff to make it look a little more fantastical. And that's what, honestly, movies should be doing, right? They should be doing things where there are real places that look good. And then, you know, it's the same thing that Dune 2 did, right? Both the Dune movies. Yes. They shot in real places, but obviously, you know, they built, like, all these practical things, but at some point, you can't just make all of that. It doesn't, you know, work to do everything. And it's why Dune looks that came out this year looks a lot better than David Lynch's Dune, you know?
Yeah.
That was completely practical. But it would also look a lot better than something that was just completely computer animated. And I think that middle ground that Poor Things found is really the sweet spot.
Yeah, exactly. And also contributes greatly to, you know, performance of you're actually there, you're seeing the thing, you're touching the thing, you're smelling it, you're tasting it in some instances. And definitely gives lends to a better performance and lends to a better movie overall. Like you said, also won Makeup and Hairstyling, which was, I think Maestro got a lot of talk about it because of Kazuhiro is a very prestigious filmmaker, very prestigious makeup artist, and a lot of the, let's say, accoutrement added to Bradley Cooper's face was for a talk of the town. So that got talked about. I'm not sure if it got talked about too much or there was a lot of negative talk about it, but Poor Things did end up pulling it out over Maestro.
Yeah, which, you know, was not what I was expecting, because usually it's the more realistic things that win in this category. So I was glad to see that this one went a different way this year.
Yep, and then the other one was Best Costume Design by Holly Whittingham. So what happened one year, and why I didn't go with Poor Things, just to spoil that one, was what was it? Once upon a time in Hollywood, I think, either won that or production design that year. So that really stuck in my mind, stuck in my craw of like, oh, okay. And also 1917 really continues to stick out in my mind as this example of the voters going for, when it comes to any sort of visual effects or production design or anything like that, it really stuck in my mind of like, okay, so anything bombastic, anything that's not, like, that was the 1917 went up against that year, against Avengers Endgame. So that very much stuck in my mind of, oh, okay, so going forward, I'm going to try to predict that they're going to go for, you know, smaller stuff, realistic stuff that you've seen. You know what I mean? A lot of the explanation of why they went for 1917 over Avengers Endgame was, you know, you know what a burning building looks like. You've seen that. You've seen the ground. You've seen wet ground. You've seen soldiers in a field before. So it was a very familiar thing of your. It was an easy comparison for your brain to make of, I've seen a burning building in real life, and this looks what I've seen before. I've never seen a giant purple man on Titan battling other, you know, intergalactic people. So my thought going forward in terms of the less the voting body is going to go for less spectacle, and Poor Things is a very spectacular sort of environment and world. So that's kind of why I went against Poor Things.
Yeah, and you know, with the makeup, I had the same thought. You know, I that's why I also was wrong in the makeup category. We both had spoil it, we both had the same pick of Maestro.
Yeah.
And we were both wrong. And, you know, we brought up the, Avengers Endgame one. And the one that I always think of is that Star Trek Beyond has some of the most incredible makeup, like just and production. Like just these people look, they transform people to fucking aliens that you've never seen, that heads open up and all these things happen. And it lost to Suicide Squad because they painted Margot Robbie's face with the drippy clown makeup.
That's awful. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's I'm still mad about it.
And then just to round it out, best film editing went to Jennifer Lame for Oppenheimer. So to wrap it all up, Oppenheimer took editing, cinematography, and original score, and Poor Things got makeup, costume design, and production design. So those are the three. It was a very tough night. Speaking to the overall show itself and the ceremony itself and the awards that were handed out, very, very good in terms of the split of the below-the-line stuff, very good in terms of getting first-time winners in there, and, there was the one standout that we'll talk about, but overall, I think a lot of people came away from this thinking, yeah, pretty good. Good picks. Good pick, Academy. Good picks.
Yeah.
So there's that. Let's see. I think we have just one more thing to talk about in terms of the big ones. So we'll save that after we talk about Bradley Cooper, because we have to talk about Bradley Cooper. He went full steam ahead in terms of, please give me an Oscar, Academy, and just whiffed all over the place in terms of like the Independent Spirit Awards, in terms of film, the Critics' Choice Awards, the Critics' specific, like, Chicago Critics' Awards, LA Critics' Awards, New York Critics' Awards. Nobody really gave him anything unless I'm missing one of them, which I possibly did. But yeah, just complete, utter debacle, utter whiff for Maestro. Any thoughts, feelings on that?
I feel bad for the guy, right? Like, he's somebody who he clearly wants it. He's he studied fucking how to compose for 6 years or whatever. He's doing all the things, and he's doing all the things you think you need to do to win, and this is clearly something he wants and he's passionate about. And I think the people are so fucking mean when, like, somebody wants something and, like, they care about it. It's like, wow, he's so pathetic. He wants to win it. And, like, it's the same thing we saw with Anne Hathaway, right? When Anne Hathaway was, like, getting so emotional, and then she won for Les Mis, which, by the way, I rewatched that recently.
Yep.
That is one of the greatest performances in any movie by any performer, male, female, non-binary. Like, she fucking kills it. And people gave her so much shit because she clearly really wanted the Oscar. And she won it, and then people were like, wow, look at this loser. She just won a fucking Oscar, and she's getting all emotional.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the same, like negativity I see surrounding Bradley Cooper. It's like, wow, he wants to win an Oscar so bad. I was like, yeah, fucking, I want to win an Oscar. And, like, I don't know, he's this guy who got started in movies like The Hangover and fucking Wedding Crashers. It's, like, the villain, of those movies. Like, this like, shit heel guy, who's just, like, this smarmy asshole. And now he's getting to be this, like, guy who writes and directs and acts in his own films, and he really wants this. And sure, it's a bit much sometimes, but, like, dude, like, lay off. Like, these people need to lay off Bradley Cooper, because he's just somebody with a dream. And I think people take a little bit of joy when they see somebody not able to accomplish their dream. And that just really pisses me off, honestly.
Yeah, it sort of gets back to the thing we started this conversation about, talking about sincerity and talking about the craft of filmmaking and wanting to celebrate that and to not mock it and to not, take it seriously, because you're, at the end of the day, there's thousands of hours being put into the production of a lot of these things. And like you said, he did 6 years of this. He learned how to, be a maestro. He learned to conduct a symphony orchestra, put a lot of work into it. And to just say, like, we know you did a lot of work, but you're too earnest. Fuck you. It's like, come on. I would be too,
Yeah. Like, or the alternative is, like, you're like Rachel McAdams or something, who gave a performance this year in a movie that I think should have won for Best Supporting Actress, and she wasn't even nominated, and it's just like, if you're quiet like an Amy Adams or like a Rachel McAdams, and nobody pays attention to you, then you don't get the nominations and stuff anyway, because, so it's like, so you're real damned if you do, damned if you don't. scenario.
Yes, exactly. So with that, let's get to the big ones. Best actress, mm-hmm. best picture. Talked about best director already. Before we get to that, why don't you any other stuff you want to talk about? The awards given out, speeches, anything like that.
No, I think we hit on all the big stuff, to be honest. There was one award given out, but the presentation of one, but it has to do with best picture. So
best picture, yeah.
I'll save it.
Okay, so best actress went to Emma Stone for Poor Things as Bella freaking Baxter. Her reaction was like, holy shit, did I win? I can't believe I won. Yeah. That was the reaction of a lot of people had Miss Lily Gladstone winning. Shocking moment, probably the biggest shocking moment of the night. But like you said, we've been saying this entire time, very, very close. Emma Stone gave an incredible performance, one of the best performances she's ever given in her career. She's definitely deserved it. I'm not saying she didn't deserve it at all, but there's a very interesting like parallel between her winning that last night and The Curse. You haven't seen The Curse, but here's the connection. So her and Nathan Fielder play two well-meaning white people building these houses for indigenous people, but in the process of doing that, they're not doing a lot for the community itself. They're taking away a lot of jobs from the indigenous communities, and so it's just a very weird parallel and connection.
Okay, but Emma Stone's performance that had nothing to do with indigenous communities, so that doesn't make any sense.
It's not a false parallel. It's a weird coincidence.
She doesn't have any. There's her performance in Poor Things is about woman empowerment. It has nothing. Okay.
Yes. Just saying it was a weird coincidence. That's all. I'm just pointing out this weird coincidence. So she won. She was very shocked. She gave a very good speech. Speaking of good speeches, very good speech from the heart. That was one you mentioned earlier on. Very good speech. Very well accepted. Thoughts, feelings, concerns.
Yeah. I mean, you're welcome. If we want to go back to the tape, I'm pretty sure. This is the lock. Lily Gladstone's going to win. And then I'm like, I don't know about that. I'm going to pick Emma Stone. So go back to the tape, listen to that, and listen to Damien be very wrong. Be correct.
Okay.
And you were just like, nope, it's a lock. It's a lock. She won the Spirit yeah. Award. So that she won the SAG. So that means it's a lock. And I was like, I don't think so, buddy.
You won the coin toss. Congratulations.
Yeah, it was a coin toss because I correctly saw that it was a coin toss, and you don't understand what a coin toss and a lock is.
So to be clear, Emma Stone won two major awards. She won the BAFTA. She won the BAFTA. Yeah, I had this written down, but she won like two major awards. She won like the BAFTA, and Lily Gladstone won the SAG. So they were split directly down the middle in terms of going to this awards, having won major awards, having a lot of momentum going into it. A lot of people enjoyed both performances. They both did very good. They did a lot of press for the thing. They were very good about doing that sort of stuff. They were very emotional and very, they gave two great performances.
Yeah, this is all the stuff that I was saying before the podcast when you were saying it was a lock.
I was hoping to put it out into the universe that it would be a lock. So yes, very, very shocking. That's all I can say. I'm not going to say controversial because,
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, crazy night.
Not shocking to me because, like I said, I always kind of knew this was a 50-50 thing. Like I said, I even thought it was going to be Emma's year. I thought it was like maybe a 51 Emma, and 49 Lily.
Yes.
I did say in that podcast we were picking that I kind of wanted it to be Lily Gladstone. All things considered, though, if you look at this just completely objectively, like these are two of the greatest performances of the 2020s, without a doubt. They just happened to come out in the same year. So it makes it a really tough one. Like this, in a perfect world, they would both win Academy Awards for their amazing performances because they both did spectacularly in such different styles. Like we said, that Lily Gladstone's performance was very subtle, a lot with her eyes, a lot with these little emotions and stuff like that. Whereas Emma Stone's is much bigger, much more like informed by, observing like her toddler and seeing the development of her character. All things even, let's say that like you know, I've never seen an Academy Awards before. Emma Stone has never won an award before.
Yeah.
I would actually probably be saying that, like, they're about, like, it's hard to choose one.
Yeah.
But I think that I would have probably been rooting more for Emma Stone. The only reason that I'm not is because she has her Oscar. She won for La La Land. But if I'm just, like, taking that out of it, which I think you probably should, if you're looking at this as, like, an objective, who's the better performer this year, I think that is the correct way to look at the Oscars. I do think that Emma Stone has ever so slight of an edge to this, and that might even just be because Poor Things is Emma's movie, you know? Like they're both lead actresses, but one of the common complaints about, and by no fault of her own, but about Lily Gladstone, or about Kills of the Flower Moon, was Lily Gladstone kind of falls away a little bit in the third act of that movie, whereas Emma Stone is always so good and so central. And they're both incredible. I think just, you know, with a little bit of the versatility that Emma brings in the Poor Things role, you see how her character develops. I lean a little bit towards Emma Stone, who I think is probably the greatest living actress we have.
Yeah.
I'm going to just say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very good speech there. Award, I'll give you your award is in the mail, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Do you, but there is something I do need to mention, which is Oscar's so white that you know, Oppenheimer won, movie about all white people, Emma Stone beat out a person of color, so that conversation is going to happen, right? Rightly or wrongly, right? Whether that conversation should happen or needs to happen or whatever, that's going to be the talk next year of like, look who won Best Picture, look who won Best Actress, look who didn't win Best Actress. That's going to be the conversation, unfortunately, going forward. We're going to have another one of those.
Some people are going to make that argument, and they're going to ignore the fact that Divine Joy Randolph won for The Holdovers. And they're going to ignore the fact that it was a very good year for international films, that two Japanese films won Oscars. People are always going to cherry pick like that. And so, I don't think that you should give Lily Gladstone the Oscar because she's not a white person, you know?
Right. You shouldn't.
I don't think that Divine Joy Randolph didn't win that award because of Oscar so white. She won that award because she was incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know. People are going to make that argument. Some years in the past, that was a valid argument. I don't think it's a valid argument this year.
Okay. All right. No Leo in attendance, which is very odd, actually. Just thinking about him as a person in the world, being one of the preeminent actors of our time. Very odd that he wasn't there for one of the biggest movies of the year. And to root on his co-star. Very, very strange that he wasn't there, I thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I didn't even realize that. Now, thinking about it, if I had to guess, maybe it's because he is a little upset that he didn't, like, he did get snubbed. He absolutely got snubbed in Best Lead Actor category. And, you know, the Academy, obviously, he did win one finally, but he's the Academy has snubbed him so many times. This is just, and he was through the whole awards circuit, so supportive of Lily Gladstone, doing all the things you need to do to go out there and support her and stuff like that. But maybe it's like, well, the votes are cast. There's nothing else I can do to support her. I don't really want to be here when they snubbed me. I could see that being the case.
Sure. Yeah. So with that, let's talk about the winner of the night. Biggest best picture went to Oppenheimer.
Eyes see Oppenheimer.
I'm sorry. I have to mention this. Elderly people, you're great. You're awesome. You're a treasure. I love you. Have we learned nothing from 2017? Please.
Wait. So you're telling me that in a year when Emma Stone won... Best Actress, and then the next award presenter comes up, and they have to give the award, and they're geriatric and super old. They have to read off the thing. That was a bad idea. Okay.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Kimmel even mentioned it. It was like, make sure to tear up both awards, both of Ms. Stone's cards. Just no reason to mention that. I'm just saying.
I will say this in Pacino's defense. He did. It was supposed to be like the Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty reunion. It was supposed to be a reunion of him and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
And Michelle Pfeiffer dropped out, so he kind of had to like wing it and go up there on his own.
Yeah.
So you know, felt bad for him. I was surprised he wasn't pretending to chew gum the whole time.
So he almost flubbed it. He said, "My eyes see a big ass." No, she said, "I see Oppenheimer." I thought he said,
it was so weird. He delivered it like a whisper almost, and then nobody was like, "Wait, so it is Oppenheimer? Like, is that what he just said?" And like they didn't even play the Oppenheimer music for like 10 seconds.
It sounded like he said German. I thought he said like my Oppenheimer. I was like, "What did you just say? Was that German? What was that?"
He was doing like a weird accent.
He was. So Oppenheimer won Best Picture of the year. Yep. Charles Roven, this producer for the movie, apparently he's been a producing partner for Christopher Nolan for many years. He gave the longest speech. He took the longest time, I should say, of the acceptance speech. I was like, okay, who is this guy and what is he talking about? It's just very odd to have behind the scenes people come up and accept an award like that, just for me.
Yeah, it's always kind of weird when you have I always think of that, like, let the woman talk. You remember that from a few years back where there's all that, like, yeah. So, yeah, it's when, like, the people who are not creatives kind of push the creatives out of the way.
Yeah.
It's not very great, but, weird speech, but, I was glad. I knew everyone knew this was going to happen. But the thing is, Oppenheimer is a great movie. Obviously, Past Lives was my favorite movie last year, but this was also in my top four films. I think it was also in your top five.
Yes.
The only one of the other Best Picture nominees that made my top 10, although Killers of the Flower Moon and Poor Things were both honorable mentions for me. But yeah, this one, really phenomenal film. Like we said, a great film for film snobs like you and me, but also a just cracking movie for just everybody. It's a fucking 3.5-hour historical movie that made $1 billion. So, and then won Best Picture. Like, we're back. We're back. Like, we
are
a
back,
proper
baby.
Country. We are once again a proper country that we are able to. I know before we were talking about, and you were like, I love it when an Academy Award winner is 87 minutes long. But guess what? Sometimes a 3-hour movie is going to be pretty good too.
That's true. Yes, I forgot that. Yeah. The incredible moving going experience, like we were mentioning, Nolan and Spielberg, champions of cinema, champions of going to the cinema, make cinematic movies, make large, bombastic, not necessarily epics, right? Because this isn't, like I was saying before, of watching the previous Best Picture winners, a lot of them are epics, a lot of them slog, a lot of them are very dour. This is also dour, but it's also exciting at points, very interesting performances. Cillian Murphy, we forgot to mention, won a best actor Oscar. I didn't look up if he's won Oscars before, but I believe that is his first.
This is his first one, first Irish born actor to ever win an Oscar.
So very celebrated movie, celebrated performance, as they should be. Down the line, incredible performances, incredible cast, really. I was looking at the picture of them accepting the award, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot, I don't know what the picture pulled up, but there was a massive cast in that movie. Let's see if I have it. Oh, yeah. What is his name from... I have his picture right in front of me, but yeah, large cast of characters in that. Very, they all had their time in the sun. Amazing. Florence Pugh was in that. She was one of those where you're like, oh yeah, you were in that. Emily Blunt, oh yeah, you were in that. Zach Quaid, you were in that.
A lot of dudes. Most guys per minute in any.
Yes, exactly. So, yes, one of those movies that I think is going to hold up. Just speaking to, you know, did it deserve it, and is it rewatchable, and is it, is it problematic? You know, no, it's not any of those things. It's very rewatchable. It's very good. It's very, like we were saying before, it's kind of arty. It's kind of arty too, in its filmmaking. It's a goddamn miracle. It's a miracle any movie gets made, right? But this is definitely a miracle that it's got made, got distributed, made $1 billion, and won the Academy Awards. The intersection of all those things I just rattled off, I just realized partly just now that is incredible that all those things came together. Yeah, amazing win, great win. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like you said, we are now, or like I said, once again, we are now a proper country once again.
Exactly. So that is all of the winners, all of my notes here, mm-hmm. of the 96th Academy Award. Now we move to Damien and Derek's predictions. We did a little prediction here, like the day before. we had our predictions locked in, but just to make it easy on us, they have a website called Run Your Pool. It's a very easy thing. You plug in your predictions, and it over the course of the night, it auto updates. So it's a very easy, very easy to use. So with that, let me just say right off the bat that we tied. Big tie.
I was gonna go through. We're gonna go through them, but yeah. Okay.
Well, whatever. I already said we matched. We were close. It was very close.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between close and tie. Okay.
Well, we didn't tie. We have a winner. This is not a Moonlight La La Land debacle. We have a decided winner. But how we decide that winner is still a mystery. So there's that.
All right.
Early in the night, you took an early lead because I missed visual effects. I said the creator, you correctly predicted Godzilla.
No, I was wrong on the creator. We were both wrong on that. I started out pretty strong, but that was when we both wrongly picked the creator. I was surprised you did not pick Godzilla because I think that was kind of one that was more earmarked to win, but I, like we said, obviously, especially given the budget, what they were able to do with Godzilla Minus One, super impressive. But I think that just objectively, the creator, which also had, it's a mid-budget movie, you know, and one that kind of did fail, but that movie looks incredible for its budget. That movie looks like it really cost $400 million, and it cost $80 million. One of the best-looking movies I've ever seen. But it's sometimes with the Academy, it's just they just pick the movies that's a better story, you know. And Godzilla Minus One is a better story.
Yes. So
for that one to win, not like a better screenplay. I mean, like this is the narrative surrounding the award.
What was the ones you were? Because you were up like by six. I think at one point you were up by like five or six, right? What were the ones that you picked?
I was up by three because we both start like the first award was Divine Joy Randall.
Yes.
We both got, and then then you got three wrong in a row, which I got all got right.
Which were what?
Which were screenplay, right?
Yes.
Original screenplay for Anatomy of a Fall, I got right. Then, as we mentioned, there was best animated film, which you had picked the consensus pick, which was Across the Spider-Verse. Yeah. And I was thinking, you know what? There's going to be another Spider-Verse movie coming.
Yeah.
There's not going to be another Miyazaki movie coming in all likelihood. I think it's going to go to Miyazaki. I was right on that. And I do think it was a better movie. Like, no shade to Spider-Verse, which I think is a pretty good movie. But Boy in the Heron is just a masterpiece. And then I think the other one was War is Over, right? You picked that one wrong, right? The best short film animated.
Best short film animated. Where is that? Yes, I had Letter to a Pig, right? And you had War is Over, so that puts you ahead early on, correct? Yep.
Yeah. So and then, slowly over the course of the night, you know, I had a lot of these. I took a lot of chances like that, and it paid off early, but it didn't. Then over the course of the night, some of the more consensus picks started coming in. You know, I had picked I'm Just Ken, like we said, to win. That did not win. You know, then there's best documentary short subject. You talked about how Lost Repair Shop. You picked that one. I picked ABC's of Book Burning. It just seemed I didn't see any of them. It seemed a little more topical. I was wrong about that. Let's see what costume design. Did you get that one right? I got that one wrong. I picked Killers of the Flower Moon.
I got Poor Things. Yeah, that was the one where I was like, okay, yeah, it's out there. It's bombastic. It's in your face. So I picked that. You picked Killers of the Flower Moon, like we talked about.
Because I thought it was like what we talked about with makeup, the safer option. So I was wrong about that. So you were starting to make up some ground on me. Eventually, you stormed ahead at some point.
At some point, yeah. Then Miss Emma Stone picked up Best Actress.
I was looking at it, and I was like, there's only one way I can win this, right? The only way is if Emma Stone wins for me.
Because
I was like, that was a risky pick, you know, because it was not the consensus pick, but it was the one that I believed in my heart would win.
Yeah.
And that came through for me. And it was one of those things that's like, I should pick Lily. Like, that's the one that everyone thinks, right? It was like, it's so close. I think Emma could really do it. It's so, so close.
Yep.
And so I went with Emma Stone, and it paid off for me. And I was like, well, now it all comes down to one last thing. Do you want to tell people what the last thing was? So I realized then once it was that, we were like, well, because there was like a couple picks left. We had lined up on the picks. We lined up on Best Picture, obviously.
Yes.
So.
Well, the last thing was it? You're talking about the bonus pick, right? The tiebreaker?
Yeah, tiebreaker, because we both had 15 right, which is not bad.
15
out
of
23.
23, yeah. It's not great, but it's not good. I mean, it's not great, but it's not bad. Yeah.
Like I said, it's not bad. It's the same amount that Variety got right, you know?
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. So
it was like, what, 2 under Gold Derby, you know? So, like, which is, you know, that's how their entire year is spent trying to pick these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, not too bad, considering we did it in a day. But
Exactly. So the tiebreaker is, how many minutes will the award show run, including commercials? Like we said, it was a very short, very speedy production, one of the shortest in history. The actual runtime was 202 minutes. I guessed 215 minutes. Derek guessed 212 minutes. So Derek is the winner of the 2024 Academy Awards tiebreaker. Yes.
Like, I was, when I saw that, I was, because he doesn't show us before you know, the awards start with the what each other picked. And then when I saw that you had a little bit longer than me, I was like, oh, maybe I should have done longer. These things always run long.
They do.
But like, we were both over. I was over by 10 minutes. Like, this was the first ever Academy Awards that came in short ahead of schedule. So it worked out for me.
Yes, it did. So, Derek, tell me, tell the people what my punishment will be for losing.
All right. Well, have you watched the movie Waterworld?
No, have not.
Well, Damien, I'm going to spoil something for you. Dry land is not a myth, all right?
Okay, is that my punishment? Watch Waterworld?
That is your punishment. Watching Waterworld.
Great. Speaking of long epics, long war epics.
Yes.
Waterworld, another one on my docket.
It is the fifth best Mad Max movie. sixth best Mad Max movie after the 4 Mad Max movies and the Waterworld Stunt Spectacular. It's right behind all those.
If you asked me to guess who directed that, I would have guessed it was Kevin Costner, because I thought he directed Waterworld and The Postman. He directed The Postman, correct?
He officially directed The Postman. He basically shadow directed Waterworld, and there's some stuff about, like, he kind of probably fired Kevin Reynolds off the set and then basically just directed the rest of it himself.
Gotcha. All right, so what is this runtime? 135. It's not that bad. Okay, I thought it was like closer to 3.
It's not terrible.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to do that to you.
Yeah. So, overall,
unless you want The Postman, because I think that was more like 3 hours.
No, thank you. Yeah, so good. Pretty good award show. You know, one big miss, one big disappointment for me and for a lot of people. But, yeah, I gotta mention it. It's gotta be mentioned. But, yeah, good to great award show. Great pick that Mr. Nolan finally got his award. Oppenheimer won that. A lot of, quote-unquote, correct picks overall, I would say.
Yeah, really, really good, really good award show. Good, glad to see all these people get their awards, and I'm glad that the Academy chose Emma Stone. No, I'm just kidding. She deserved it, though. She deserved it, as did Lily. They both deserved it.
They're very good. Very good performances overall. So, yeah. So, with that, brings us to close to the 2023 Oscar season, the film season. Thank you, Derek, for doing all this with me, as usual.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming on, or letting me come on and talk about all this.
Yeah, no problem. So with that, we will, for Midnight Film Society Podcast, I've been Damien.
I've been Derek.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.